Paul continues to not include podcasts and Dr. Demento in the outline.
I know. I don't know why he's doing that.
Dr. Demento thing. Well,
I can have that under news.
Yeah, you'll find a way.
Yeah. Just throw the podcast rant in with the news.
Okay. Are we introducing this as funny books, Paul, or just, you know?
Yeah, funny books.
Okay.
Well, hold on. How about three hot guys, one mic? New name for the podcast?
But there are three mics.
Damn it.
We could call it the three mics.
That could be all alter egos. So you call me named Mike.
I'm Mike. This is Mike.
I'm Mike.
I'm also
Mike. And I'm Mike.
We're the three mics.
Hello and welcome to the three mics. I'm Mike.
No.
Yeah.
All right. I took a shot.
You're no fun, Paul.
I know.
Paul's the responsible one.
Who invited you?
Like being Paulie. With Aaron, Polly, and Andrew. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Andrew.
You had to think about it there for a minute, though, didn't you?
He did. He's like, who am I? Because he really thought we were going to do this three mics thing.
Yeah.
I think we might be lagging a little bit, actually.
We could still do it. Yeah. I'm just saying. So, guys. I just became aware, I think this week, that Dr. Demento retired, that he is no longer broadcasting, that he has retired from his regular weekly show. And I don't know about you guys, but, you know, when I was in high school and college, Dr. Demento was a big thing for me. I really enjoyed listening to Dr. Demento. Now, I didn't grow up in California or live in California at any time, so I was getting the syndicated show. And I always had to chase it because it never seemed to stay at the same time on my local radio station, nor did it stay on the same radio station. It'd move from like one station to another over a period of months. But I would chase that thing down. I'd record it, you know, back in those days where you'd record stuff off the radio. And I have to tell you, I think that Dr. Demento was very formative for me, exposing me to a lot of comedy that I very much appreciate. And it's just still like one of my favorite songs is Tom T-Bone Steinkes, Existential Blues. I really love Dr. Demento, and I'm curious, Dr. Demento mean anything to you guys?
So I first heard of Dr. Demento watching The Simpsons because there's a point, I think, in the first or second season where, Lisa runs in and says, Bart, your arch enemy is on the radio. And he turns on the radio and it's Dr. Demento. but to be honest, I also thought Dr. Demento had gone off the air a long time ago. I didn't realize he was still on.
Yeah, you know, he apparently still had a presence. I don't know that they were continuing to syndicate. And I think the problem that I ran into with Dr. Demento is that he never really graduated to the internet. He has a page where they archive his programs. It's like hundreds and hundreds of programs or episodes, I should say. But they didn't transition them into a podcast. And so they're streaming.
Which seems crazy.
It is crazy. And, you know, it's a streaming site. You have to pay to stream, $3 an episode. And, you know, and they say that it's because of the licensing rights. But I'm sorry, I don't really believe that. They only have an Android app for the streaming. So there's not an iPhone app. I mean, it is it is almost like it was designed for a 2010 computer. You know, I mean, it is highly frustrating. But Paul, I didn't hear you say anything. What was your experience with Dr. Demento?
I my experience with Dr. Demento amounts to 30 seconds ago where I Googled Dr. Demento.
Seriously?
I truly had no idea. Yeah. I was like, why is Aaron so fascinated with Dr. Demento?
God, I got to tell you.
So a little history for you, dear listener. Aaron's been mentioning all week that we're going to be talking about Dr. Demento on today's podcast. And I'm like, I don't know what that is.
And Paul only ventured to look up Dr. Demento as we're talking about it right now. Yeah, that's some high quality podcasting there, Paul.
That's what I do.
I have to tell you, you know, in the 80s in high school was sort of the height of my Dr. Demento fandom. You know, because once I discovered girls, you know, I didn't have quite so much time to focus on Dr. Demento. But I got to tell you, he was hilarious. You know, the songs that he would play and super obscure stuff that you weren't going to hear anywhere else. And they're all like, you know, novelty comedy songs. Just fantastic, fantastic stuff. And I just can't believe, I just marvel. Because, you know, every couple of years I'd go out there and maybe does he have a podcast now? No. I mean, it is amazing to me that this guy that had this, you know, radio program that I want to say from the 70s all the way up to just the end of October of this year doesn't have a presence online other than this ridiculously old webpage where they, you know, stream the audio. I don't get it. But
yeah, it seems like they're creating a barrier to entry. Oh, by the way, they have a
huge barrier, and you would think that, you know, somebody would have figured that out. I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Well, that
is it much like us not being on TikTok?
Yeah, probably. But you know, he's really kind of the guy who discovered Weird Al Yankovic. You know, he's the guy who brought you, who provided a platform for Weird Al Yankovic to, you know, sing Another One Rides the Bus, right? I mean, I love the guy. I think he's terrific. So, I'm sorry you don't have any experience with people. What was that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that Simpsons episode that referenced him was from 1994, and that was the first time I'd heard of him. But I've listened to a few episodes over the years, but I'm not the level of fan that you are.
Yeah. Existential blues. I'll send you a link.
Okay.
I'll get right on that. You know, hopefully one day someone talks about this podcast in the same reverence that you talk about Dr. Demento.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to happen.
You never know.
About how we make it too hard to access our content? I don't know.
Well, about how we influenced their youth, and we were the ones who introduced them to, I don't know, Matt Fraction or Jeff Parker or friend of the podcast, Ron Mars.
Uh-huh.
True. Seems likely.
True.
Yeah.
You know, we definitely over the years some messages and whatnot, blaming us for people getting back into comic books after they'd been away for, you know, however many years. Then they started listening to funny books, and then they started buying comics again.
And then opposite gender clones. So, you know,
it's inevitable, right? Like, I mean, you know, did you see, I mean, I know you guys don't follow sports news. I mean, Andrew does a little bit.
I do.
But you saw Tom Brady's dog thing, right? I mean, Tom Brady's he's a clone.
Yeah.
Like, how about that?
Yeah, I think Tom Brady's got too much money, but yeah, I did see that. If I had the money to clone like my dog who died in a traumatic way, would I clone it? Probably.
Yeah, but, same. Same. Yeah. I mean, I'd clone, you know, my dog Walter in a minute. Not a question. Not a question.
Yeah. It's like nobody's seen Pet Sematary on this podcast. guys.
Yeah. I don't want a zombie dog, Paul.
This is science, Paul, not superstition.
That's right.
True,
that's right.
True. Until it becomes.
So, hey, go ahead, Andrew.
I'm just going to ask Paul if he's welcome to Derry because we were talking horror for a minute.
I'm going to wait. to answer that question until we get to talk about our favorite TV shows.
Sorry.
Because that actually, no, that's a good segue. Today we're going to be talking, this is our Pop Culture 2025 in Review podcast. So we're going to talk about our favorite TV shows, our favorite movies, what we're most looking forward to in 2026, unrelated to comics, because the Funny Book Awards will be, I don't know, January. But, you know, we're going to talk about some of the favorite... Yeah, January. So we'll talk about some, you know, some of the favorite non-comic. This is basically an excuse for Aaron and I to talk about Taylor Sheridan. and because we never made our Yellowstone podcast happen before the fall of Taylor Sheridan. And so we'll talk about all those things here in a bit. But Aaron, what were you going to say? You were going to say something important.
Well, I was just going to, I was going to, you know, say, I know you're not much of a podcast listener. No. But Andrew, are you? Do you listen to a variety of podcasts?
Not like I used to. I used to be a huge consumer of podcasts. These days, my lifestyle has changed a little, so I don't. And I picked up Audible. It was the other rest. And in the time like when I'm clean, I used to listen to podcasts. I'm listening to Audible books these days, but not anymore.
Gotcha. I continue to listen to a great deal of podcasts. You know, I listen to a lot of news and information podcasts during the workday and, you know, entertainment podcasts, you know, outside of work hours. But I used to have a really strong opinion about financially supporting podcasts. And, you know, I just wasn't a fan of it. You know, because there was so much quality free content out there. I was like, you know, why in the world would I, you know, financially support a podcast? But I broke down this year and actually, you know, started financially supporting a couple of podcasts. And, you know, because the content was so strong and they had some content behind the paywall that I wanted access to. And then, you know, promptly quit doing that with one or two, you know, one because, you know, I had exhausted their behind the wall content and they weren't generating enough new stuff to warrant me continuing to support. And another one because, and this, I just find this maddening, you're paying for content and there's all this vacation time they take. Like if it's Veterans Day, so we're not going to post an episode, even though we are a daily podcast. And I'm like, you know, maybe you could have generated something, you know, to go in that space, you know, a bonus episode since, you know, I am a fee paying member. I found that maddening. So I was just curious if you guys had any experience with that.
I in the past I've done some Patreons to support some podcasts, but yeah, if they kind of stop putting out content, I have never hesitated to drop them off the Patreon if I feel like there aren't enough content to warrant the amount of money that they're charging me a month.
But I would take.
Oh, go ahead, Paul. You first.
No, you go first. You go.
I was going to say, I was going to take issue with Aaron's statement that he he's only recently started financially supporting podcasts, because I think he's been financially supporting this podcast for like 15 years.
Yeah, there is that.
Yeah, fair point. But other podcasts. How about that? Other podcasts.
Yeah. Much like you, Andrew, my experience is more in the Patreon area of things, less so a paywall kind of situation. And I don't, not to be weird, because like, hey, if anyone wants to send us money, please send us money. But I haven't done any free podcasts. I've done it for a couple of YouTubers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't mind supporting some YouTubers in that space, you know, especially, I mean, you're providing free content that I, you know, that's well produced and I enjoy it. I do much prefer something for the money. Like, you know, like bonus episodes or something like that. So, I mean, I do contribute to a few YouTube channels, but, we ourselves do not have a Patreon for our YouTube channel. Cause I feel like I would be sad for the $7 a month that I probably actually generated. And I'd be like,
you know, we have, you know, as a podcast discussed many times, you know, do we set up a Patreon? Do we do something like that, like to support Rainsboro or something? And, you know, There are a couple of reasons why I don't support that for us, but I think that the primary one is when people pay for something, they have ownership and they have a right to have expectations.
They feel entitled to a certain level.
That's right. And, you know, because this isn't our job for any of us, I think that wasn't a position that I ever wanted to be in, right? You know, we owe the feed something. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I do this podcast and have done this podcast for the number of years that I have because I just enjoy doing it. I like chatting with you guys. You know, I know that if we're going to get together, you know, once a week to record an episode, I get to visit with my friends for at least an hour or so. And that is something that I really look forward to. You know, and the fact that anybody else listens to it is great, you know, so I don't want to be in a position where I'm getting paid for it unless it's going to be my full-time job.
But hey, it could be, Aaron. If enough people pay for it, we could live off of this. We could live off of this podcast money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe not at the level that we become accustomed to.
Fat stacks of podcast cash.
Any day now. Any day. Yeah, Scrooge McDuck swimming in our money bins.
That's fun because, you know, I volunteer for a few things and there's one thing I volunteer for that takes, you know, a fair amount of work out of my day. And we have we were in a meeting one day and we were talking about finances and for this group. And there was a reference, someone made a reference like I was getting paid for it for the work I was doing. And excited I've gotten a long time, I was like, I just want to be really clear. To everyone here, I'm not getting paid. Like this, what I'm putting in is not, I didn't, this in my head, this is not why I said that loud, but this is not my getting paid level of effort. Like this is my volunteering, helping out level of effort. And OCD. So, but yeah, I don't, because all the other people that I know are volunteers. I don't want anyone to think that, that, you know, I'm the one getting paid and yeah, put in that level of work.
This is my volunteerism and behavioral disorder.
That is the reason I entered the door today.
Okay. Well, yeah, I've now gotten the Dr. Demento and podcast conversation out of my system. We can proceed, Paul.
That was a long ass conversation, Aaron.
I gotta tell you,
that was way longer than I expected it to be. Well,
I'm sending you guys some links. I'm just telling you.
All right. I will. I'm sure I'll click them.
Oh, you'll click
them. I was going to click those links much like Aaron opened that email.
Exactly. Well, you know, before we hop into pop culture, we did want to talk a little bit about one of this week's new comic releases. 1776, issue 1 from Marvel Comics, written by J. Michael Straczynski. You know, Babylon 5, J. Michael Straczynski. I'm sure that reboot is coming any day now. With art by multiple artists. You know, I picked it up because I thought Ron Lim was the primary artist, but really Ron Lim. It's split between current, present day, and the past. And so Ron Lim draws the present day, and Jay Leiston draws, oh wait, no, he's the inker. Who else? Sean Damian Hill draws the stuff set in the past. So Aaron, you picked this up. You are the history buff on the podcast.
Am I?
Tell us, are you not?
I'm a history buff. I just didn't know that I was the history buff on the podcast.
Is it
Andrew, I think history buff? I'm a little bit of a history buff, but I would defer to Aaron just based on his how to phrase this.
He was there.
Advanced years.
Exactly right. He's had more experience with history than I have.
Asshole. I really liked this book. I thought this book was a lot of fun. To start off with the use of the two different artists for the two different eras, I thought that worked really well. I thought that Ron Lim was a great choice for the modern era because it does look like the modern era sort of house style for Marvel. And then when you cut back to 1776, with Sean Damian Hill's art, it has a much more grounded sort of feel to it. And certainly a lot more cinematic, like that opening splash page, you know, is shot from the ground level during the battle. And I thought that that worked really well. And he does a nice job of depicting the historical figures like Ben Franklin. I very much dug this issue. It tells the story of Morgan Le Fay being summoned up to, you know, change the outcome of the Revolutionary War, and the modern day Avengers having to go back to stop her. And there's some variations in the plot that make this more dangerous than other circumstances where we've seen Morgan Le Fay. I thought this was a whole lot of fun. It didn't seem burdened with a bunch of other junk. It just seemed like, hey, we're going to tell this fun story. Here you go. And I thought J. Michael Straczynski sometimes gets out over his skis in exposition. And I felt like there was just enough. Just enough. I thought it was fun. How about you guys?
I really enjoyed this book. You know, it is... I certainly don't feel like... like it's one of those things that's going to change Marvel continuity, or that it's, you know, a big event book. It's just a fun little side story. You know, five issues, you know, in time for the 400th, 450th? No, 350? How many years?
250, Paul.
250. Wow. Math. My brain, wow. I know.
I'm like, wow.
Wow.
I thought maybe you were going for like an issue count or something. What the hell is he doing?
No.
Wow. So I am indeed the history buff.
And the math buff, apparently. Wow, my brain. 250th anniversary of America.
Yeah.
And so I think it'll be a fun read. I think it's, you know, just a nice all ages friendly book. You know, certainly anyone with a passing familiarity of any of these characters can pick it up and enjoy this story and get a little bit of a, you know, fun tale. So I and Ron Lim, you know, I'll pick up anything that dude draws.
Same. He's,
you know, one of my favorite artists in comic books growing up. And so I'm glad he's doing this book.
One of the things I find interesting about the book is that, you know, on the cover, you've got, you know, Spider-Man, the Hulk, Iron Man, Captain America, Doctor Strange, and then also Cyclops and Sue Storm. Neither of whom are in the book. So I'm going to guess they're going to come later in the series. I just thought that was really interesting. I was like, huh, you know, they're going to be adding some different heroes in here. And each of these characters is kind of in their classic sort of mode.
Yeah.
You know, that this is a story, it feels like, that could take place almost any time during the Marvel era. It doesn't, you know, you're grabbing sort of the iconic version of the characters, though I will say it's not Rage Hulk. It's more of a, you know, Hulk is a little bit more under Banner's control. But I think this is a nice, fun book. And to your point, Paul, I don't think this is anything that's going to be affecting Marvel continuity. It's not going to be, you know, anything that, you know, changes the course of the ongoing storyline within the MCU. I just think that the Marvel universe, not the cinematic universe. I just think it's going to be a good, fun story.
Yeah, I agree. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes, and you know, I'm in for it.
Same. And while we're on the topic of comics, I just want to tell everybody, because I know you've all been waiting on tenterhooks for this. But the first Dread Star omnibus volume came out and available digitally on Comixology or Kindle. I picked my digital copy up this week. I'm very excited. I've already read through Metamorphosis Odyssey, and I'm reading through the price right now. All Jim Starlin's wonderful creator-owned stories involving Dread. Great stuff. Highly recommend.
Aaron, still trying to make Dreadstar a thing.
I know, right? I'm gonna make it happen, Paul.
Any day now.
That's right.
If Aaron even gets one of you to read Dreadstar. Please comment on our social media channels or send us an email, because we need to know if it's Aaron has converted one of you to a Jim Starlin Dreadstar fan.
And, you know, I've got all three of the hardback omnibuses, but it's nice having it digital because it's a whole lot easier to read than having that, you know, great big chunky ass book in your lap. So I'm deeply, deeply enjoying it. And the reproduction's fantastic. So highly, highly recommend.
Well, you know, 1776 actually reminds me a little, you know, I was reading 1776 and it, of course, it features Benjamin Franklin in a pretty predominantly, and it really brought to mind, like, because I've been deep in getting caught up on Redcoat from Image Comics recently.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he features very heavily in the first arc of the book. And so it's like, wait, hold on.
Yeah, what am I reading?
This doesn't match Redcoat continuity. But you know, Andrew's been long beating the drum on Redcoat, and I'm glad I've gotten caught up. I've really been enjoying that book, and it's been pretty consistent in quality.
So did you like the second story arc better after that whole initial story arc result?
I did. You know, and the second arc starts pretty harshly. You know, with like a, you know, like murder and stuff. So it's been interesting, but I really liked the second arc, and one of the reasons I bring it up in the podcast, besides the 1776 connection, is that they announced this week, you know, that Redcoat has been optioned to be, I believe, a movie.
Yeah,
I don't remember if it's a movie or a TV show. It's been optioned for some type of cinematic equivalent. Atlas Entertainment and Ghost Machine. It says, "Oh, feature adaptation." Okay, so you know, I'm curious to see, you know, what they do with it and who they cast as Simon Pure.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting question. Who do you put in for Simon Pure? You could do like a. What's his name? Joshua Hartley, the guy who does Tracker.
Oh yeah, Justin Hartley. Yeah, he actually probably wouldn't be a bad option. Or
that's the poor man's Chris Evans. Is that who we're talking about?
I mean, they're a bit different, but I mean, yeah, they're
isn't
both
a poor man's Chris Evans at this point.
And are muscular. Because
I mean, I was gonna say, what about Jason? Not Jason. He's another Jay. The dude from Supernatural.
Bateman. Jason Bateman.
I would Jensen watch Ackles? That. Jensen Ackles. I think Jensen Ackles could pull off Simon Pure.
He might be getting a little long in the tooth to be Simon Pure, maybe. But
well,
I don't think Simon Pure is young.
But he's got to have an English accent, right? He's got to be a Brit.
Yes, he has to be able to do a British accent. Yes.
Yeah, and I don't
he's
see
been
Jensen
living in the United States for 250 years. You would think the British accent would leave at some point.
I just don't think Jensen Ackles has the chops to pull that off.
You don't think so?
I don't.
Supernatural.
He has a British accent, much like on a scale, on a level of Paul's British accent.
Cheers.
Cheers. Well, you know, with this being our pop culture podcast, you know, one of the things we wanted to talk about was some of our favorite TV shows. And Andrew, I wanted to bring it back to you asking me about Welcome to Derry, because we're only three episodes into Welcome to Derry now. It is a new show on HBO Max, and I think it's showing on actual HBO. Wait, are they back to HBO Max? Yeah, they're back to HBO Max.
Yes.
And is a prequel to It, but more a prequel to the actual movie, the recent movies by Andy Muschietti, the guy who also directed The Flash. But he directed the two It movies. He also has directed a number of episodes of the TV show. And, you know, as a guy who grew up reading Stephen King novels, and I haven't read one in a long damn time, I basically went out on Stephen King when he said he was retiring 20 years ago. When the first time he said he was retiring, and then he's like, nah, never mind.
My last Stephen King novel was Pet Sematary. I was so disgusted by Pet Sematary, I never picked up another Stephen King novel.
I think mine was probably Green Mile. No, I think I've read something after that. I don't know, but... You know, I mean, and not that Green Mile was a bad one to go out on, but I just kind of trailed away from him.
Favorite were Firestarter and Dead Zone.
Those are good ones. Those are very good ones.
I love both of those novels. And I enjoy the Barrymore Firestarter film. I think that's other than George C. Scott's portrayal as a Native American, I rather enjoy that movie.
See, if George C. Scott can portray a Native American, Jensen Ackles can portray a British guy.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point.
But yeah, no, Welcome to Derry. I'm really, really enjoying it. If you are a fan of Stephen King, you know, the thing about it is that it very much has, it's even though it is an It prequel series, it very much has ties to other Stephen King novels and finds way to tie them in. So you get references to Shawshank. You get references to The Shining. In fact, Dick O'Halloran from The Shining, or Dick Halloran, not O'Halloran, is a character, a very prominent character in the TV show. There are references to other ones, including It Looks Like the Mist, based on some of the previews that I've seen. So, I mean, I'm really enjoying the show. I think it really, if you are, you know, a Stephen King fan from you know, when Stephen King was good, it certainly finds ways to tie those things together in like a connected continuity that I really enjoy.
I'm not opposed to watching it because I did enjoy the two recent It movies, particularly the one with drawn blank on his name all of a sudden. It was the second one, I think.
James McAvoy.
No, but I do like James McAvoy. It's the guy who used to be on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, Bill Hader.
Yeah, I love Bill Hader, and I thought he was great in that. And but yeah, I did. I enjoyed those, so I'll watch this. I just haven't. There is just not enough time in the day to watch all the good TV that's out.
That is true.
Yeah. We've definitely run into
it. It is also on my list to watch. I'm waiting for a few more episodes to build up so I can binge them more closely together.
Well, and it's not in my wife's wheelhouse, so it's one of those things that I'll get to just burn through. I don't have to kind of pace to include the little woman in it. But
I would not recommend watching it with her. Just FYI, I think she will be gone within the first 5 minutes.
she's not big into the horror genre, but. I did finish Task recently. Did either one of y'all watch that?
No, the one with Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah,
how was that?
I did not.
Really good. It's made by the same guy who brought us Mayor of Eastwick, which I also loved. It is one of my challenges with so much of prestige TV these days is that they're just great big downers, right? You know, everyone's just terrible people and they're all miserable and it's super depressing and there's just no joy anywhere. And that's one of my big arguments with so much of this type of storytelling, because, you know, humans, even in the worst of circumstances, tend to be kind of funny. And I'm like, you know, you could put some humor in here and it would make it a little. But Task is great. It is to be clear, kind of a downer in a lot of respects. You know, it starts off with the main character in the worst scenario. His wife is dead, killed by his adopted son, not intentionally, but his adopted son had an episode, knocked his wife down the stairs, killing her. And he is a agent with the FBI. And formerly, I mean, we're baking in a lot of stuff to this guy's character, formerly a Catholic priest who left the priesthood, you know, married his wife, had a daughter, and then adopted some kids. And it's just super good. And there's a real Sons of Anarchy vibe to it in the crime that they're investigating. And you cannot fault the acting, the directing, the writing. I mean, there is a lot of talent. And Mark Ruffalo looks like he put on 50 pounds for the role, but turns out he was wearing a fat suit. I did not realize he was wearing a fat suit, but he is great in the show. Highly recommend. It's one of my favorite shows.
Oh, that's another HBO. Two votes for HBO.
Well, guess what? We're going to make it three.
Uh-oh, look out.
No, Holiday Baking Championship? Is that what you're going to reference here?
No. Would you like to guess again?
Peacemaker.
No, Peacemaker's on my list of favorite shows, but no, that's not my favorite. It's my favorite show from 2025, so far at least, was The Pitt, which is Bill Wiley's return to the medical drama.
Yeah. Yeah, we burned through the pit. Yeah.
Yeah. Paul, have you seen it?
I have not, and I've heard very good things about it. But much to Aaron's point, I've also heard it's not a pleasant viewing experience.
I mean, there are ups and downs about it, right?
So, I would say the same, that there are ups and downs.
There are highs and lows throughout the show. And one of the things I didn't know going into it was that, you know, there's 12, 13 episodes, and each episode is 1 hour of this shift in this ER. So, like, episode one is, like, from 7 to 8 a.m. And so you see the whole shift unfold across the season. But it's fantastic. It's, you know, I don't think you're going to find an ER where all this stuff happens in one day. But for a show and the drama, and it's barely realistic. So, yeah, there are some things that some people might find a bit disturbing, but it's an excellent show.
Oh, yeah, certainly the medical scenes where they're, you know, cutting into somebody or whatever. It's like, yee, you know, there's a lot of blood and viscera in the show.
I love the part where the intern is like, it tries to put an IO into someone who's conscious.
Uh-huh.
And the guy, of course, screams.
Yeah.
And they're like, what are you doing, man? He's like, Jenny said everybody gets an IO. Which he was true. They did say that. Yeah. But, like, you know, obviously you don't do it on someone who's conscious. You know, that's how you do when someone's out. but some of the nuances to the characters, I mean, you have the one character who they never, and I like the fact they never come out and say that she's autistic or on the spectrum. Yeah. But the fact that she obviously is, the way there's that great scene where she's relating to an autistic patient.
Yeah.
They just demonstrate how she, you know, because she understands that condition, she's able to provide a much more therapeutic environment and get more cooperation out of the patient than you know, someone who just treats this autistic patient as just another patient. And you got the gunner. I love the character. I mean, I don't love the character of the gunner, but it's you know, a personality type that's not unusual to see in like an academic teaching hospital. And so and then Noah Wiley plays a very flawed, broken, you know, main character, and you know, but even like the charge nurse, I love her. It's a great cast, and yes, there's some happy things that happen, but obviously, yeah, there's some bad things that happen. So The Pit is kind of my number one to make an HBO Max sweep for our top three.
I will say, you know, The Pit is not a dour downer. There are certainly some extremely dramatic episodes and storylines, and you know, there are episodes that will just break your heart, but it is balanced. I would say there is joy on the screen, there is humor on the screen. I can't say that about Task, even though I found it to be, you know, very rewarding to watch, because I do feel like the ending sort of redeems some of the darkness earlier in the season, and it's coming back for a season two, and just like The Pit is, The Pit's coming back in January,
which shocked me a little bit, but it was so successful, I guess they just had to do it because it felt very much like they wrote The Pit to be a one and done season.
Yeah. Well, and I think they were prepared to walk away from it, but it did wind up being such a huge hit. And it did something that I think is important to the streaming space. It showed that you can have a successful 15-episode season.
Well, and the format they did really helped with having that 15. It didn't feel like anything was wasted, right? It didn't feel like there were any superfluous episodes.
Yeah, agreed. They all moved the story forward. Some of these TV seasons are so short. You know, it's like, what was even the point? I would love to see more of them to, you know, a 15 episode format. Maybe not 22, maybe not 26, but you know, 15 I think is a nice healthy.
Yeah, you know, I'll go back and watch old shows, and that 22 to 24 episode, especially for hour-long shows, it's just oppressive to try to get old series.
Yeah. Well, particularly, you know, if it is an ongoing story, right, you're going to get filler stuff.
Yes, you know, like the X-Files. I'm thinking specifically of the X-Files. Like,
well, and Star Trek. I mean, you know, the Berman era of Star Trek, you know, there was a lot of filler. There's a lot of crap, you know, in there, you know. But when you've got, you know, sort of one-off television, you know, like the, you know, the procedurals, it's a lot easier to just, you know, turn out standalone episodes. But
yeah. Well, are we going to do a second round of favorite TV shows?
Oh, we can.
Because I wasn't going to say that Welcome to Derry was like one of my favorite TV shows. It's still too new.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
For me to commit to that. But Andrew, you were excited to say something. You go first.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump in because to go along with Aaron's Star Trek thing, my second favorite, it's kind of tied with another one, but Strange New World season 3. Man, I just love Anson Mount. I know that Strange New Worlds is not maybe has some haters out there, but outside of the musical episode, I'm still enjoying Strange New Worlds quite a bit.
Oof.
I heard the whoop. I was going to give you a chance.
Yeah, I have not actually seen a single episode of Strange New Worlds season.
I haven't watched the entire season yet. There have been some episodes that I found wildly objectionable. But there was, I apologize. I didn't realize we were going to get into a Star Trek conversation today. otherwise I'd have been prepared. There was at least one episode that I watched, and I even texted Paul. I'm like, hey, this episode's pretty darn good. So there are some gems there. I still have big issues. And let me just stop. The cast in Strange New Worlds is next level quality. They are so talented. They are so well cast. I love every single one of them. I love Ethan Peck as Spock. I love Anson Mount as Pike. I love them all. They are not given enough to work with. The writing on the show, in my opinion, has just been is wildly underserving. And in particular, I get super frustrated with Captain Pike because he is not authoritative enough. He is not captain enough. You know, there are times where I'm like, just make a fucking decision, Pike. You know, it's kind of your job.
I mean, but if you think back to TOS and Kurt waxing and having, you know, talking to McCoy and Scotty and Spock to get opinions. I mean, it's not unusual, especially for that era, for the captain to be wrecked by a, you know, dilemma that he needs.
No,
even Picard sitting in the ready room getting opinions. I mean, like, all these people get opinions. They don't necessarily have immediate authoritative decisions.
No, I don't disagree with you. But there are many times where Anson Mount's Pike doesn't make a decision, or he makes a decision too late because he was still, you know, listening. And I'm like, absolutely, you should be consulting your experts. You should be, you know, getting additional feedback, just like, you know, Kirk did, just like all of them have done. I just feel like he doesn't take charge enough, that he sits in the background. And that's part of the show, is that they're wanting to, you know, draw focus on other characters, but they do that by reducing his power, by reducing his authority. And that drives me crazy.
Yeah. It does not drive me crazy as it does you. And I want to say every single episode, like, I particularly did not like the musical episode from season 2. They have a holodeck episode in season 3 that is meh.
Yeah. I did not care for the holodeck episode.
Yeah. Yeah, and, it was okay. It was kind of fun to see them playing different characters, but meh.
And the holodeck episode makes me chafe because
of the timeline.
Uh-huh. And yeah. The fact that the animated series, the original series animated series, had already addressed the holodeck. So kind of what they were doing in Strange New Worlds was something they had already done in the animated series, and it just kind of ticked me off.
But to be fair, the average viewer of Strange New Worlds, what percentage of the Strange New World viewers do you think are familiar with the animated series from what was it?
Very few. I think very few.
You think very few? You don't think Strange New Worlds is just preaching to the choir at this point? Like, that's one of the things that was on my list, gentlemen, was the fall of Star Trek, at least in my mind.
I think that
trying to appeal to new people with Stranger Worlds.
I think
I know they're trying to, but are they actually appealing to new people?
I don't know if they're successful, but I think they're trying.
I think modern Star Trek has alienated most of the traditional Star Trek fans.
Yeah, ever since Discovery, people, the kind of more traditional grognards, if you will, have been complaining about the new Trek.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, I'm watching Star Trek because it's on guy because, you know, it's Star Trek. I love it. And I have tuned out of much of Star Trek because I rage quit during Discovery's final season. I don't have objections to some of the stories that they're telling. What I have objections to is the quality of the writing and that people are writing Star Trek who I don't think have ever watched Star Trek before. And that drives me crazy.
I didn't realize my second pick was going to be so controversial, but
it's hugely controversial.
Throw it over to Aaron for his second favorite TV series from 2025.
You know, I got to tell you, I'm gonna throw up two shows because we've already talked about in earlier episodes. Peacemaker and Alien Earth, I think, were fantastic this season. I cannot wait for the next season of Alien Earth. And I'm saddened to hear that if we do get a third season of Peacemaker, it is years down the road. And that makes me sad. But Alien Earth was fantastic. I can't wait.
James Gunn is busy, man.
He is busy, man. Busy, busy man. But I appreciate
that they announced a second season of Alien Earth. Like they, you know, when it ended, people were like, okay, well, you know, that was good. But yeah, they announced a second season.
Yeah, I think it was a big win for Alien Earth. Oh, it's so good.
It's not that I found anything objectionable about it. I just had, like we mentioned, I haven't had a chance. I think I watched the first two episodes.
Yeah, there's not enough time in the day to watch all the TV out there. I had to quit my job to watch TV and read comic books all day.
We'll see if we got sponsored, if we got enough people to pay for our podcast, we probably
Right?
Yeah.
Fee paying member site, Patreon, setting up any second now.
We're going to have Andrew take his shirt off.
He's dreaming.
much like another one of my favorite TV shows from 2025, I'm just going to say nobody wants this. Season two. Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just going to throw out my last two as well. Mobland and Andor,
Andor. I forgot about Andor.
Yeah, Andor. You know, Andor reminded me that hey, you know, genre television can still be good. Mm-hmm. You know, and not just good, but groundbreaking. Yeah, I mean, because I think you know there was plenty of good genre television this year. You know, like we're talking about now, and you know, some I genuinely enjoyed, but nothing quite as much. In you know these things that I grew like the Marvel TV shows like we're going to talk about Daredevil when we talk about the funnies but like as good as Daredevil and other shows like Ironheart and Star Trek and all that and even I enjoyed all the Star Wars shows this year. I enjoyed Acolyte, I enjoyed Skeleton Crew, but nothing quite of the level of Andor. Something unique in the Star Wars world. And, you know, even though it's not genre, you know, it features so many great genre actors. It features Tom Hardy, Helen Mirren, Pierce Brosnan. Mobland was the reason I'm bringing up Mobland is that, you know, a lot of stuff that I loved that was appointment television for me fell off this year. Taylor Sheridan and Yellowstone and that whole debacle. The Last of Us, I enjoyed season one, didn't even bother with season two. Star Trek, Strange New Worlds, I didn't even start. But for some reason, freaking Mobland was appointment television for me. They would release a new episode every Monday on Paramount Plus, and I would literally watch it every Monday morning. Even though it wasn't like I was worried about it being ruined on social media. I wasn't, you know, it's not like we were talking about it on the podcast. But damn it, if I didn't just really enjoy that show in a way that, you know... To Aaron's point, so much television now is dour and down. And Mobland, don't get me wrong, it's not about good people. These are bad people. But, you know, the guy, you know, it's Guy Ritchie's one of the executive producers of the show. I think he directed the first episode. But, like, it finds a way to inject enough humor in this crime story that I'm fascinated. And but it also injects a little bit of that Yellowstone Succession stuff, because it's about a family and the family interactions and the family drama and who's taking over for the parents and stuff like that. So I really highly recommend Mobland. It has been renewed for season two. I think, you know, they're trying to figure it out around Tom Hardy's busy schedule. But if you like mafia stuff, I mean, it's not, you know, it's English mob, not, you know, American mafia, but it's really, really enjoyable and well written and well acted.
It's on my watch list. I just have not had a moment to sit down to it.
Yeah.
Because it looks great. I like everybody in it.
Yeah, for me, you know, I watch shows on the treadmill. That's where I kind of get caught up on shows. So, like, in the morning, I just, like, pop on a TV show and watch it. And so that's, like, my appointment television.
So, I got to say, this kind of leads me to the question. How sustainable do you think it is for the amount of media that's being put out every year? Because we all talk about how there's not enough time to watch everything. Are we going to have a bubble? Are we, like, in a media bubble?
I think
that's eventually going to pop?
I think we absolutely are. Yeah, I think that, you know, we've already seen some of the shrinkage in terms of streamers. I think we'll continue to see consolidation, and I think we'll continue to see less original scripted content being bought. And I think we certainly won't get as much, much activity in the genre space as we have.
I think some people will continue to invest, like Netflix and stuff like that. I think some others will, you know, pull back a little bit, like certainly Paramount Plus, now that they've lost freaking Taylor Sheridan. You know, we've already heard HBO Max will be pulling back a little bit on the original scripted content, stuff like that. I mean, I think, you know, the format of streaming, which I don't know, I feel like everyone said this, but movie companies ignored it. It's not really financially lucrative to throw hundreds of millions of dollars in every TV show.
Yeah.
But they kept doing it for some reason.
Right.
And, you know, but it in the end, it's really got the things that stand out are quality content, well acted, well written, well produced. I'm looking forward to some of the new content coming next year. We, you know, earlier this week, we got a preview of Monarch season 2.
Legacy of Monsters.
Looks like
it'll
heavily feature Legacy of Monsters. That's gonna looks like Kurt Russell's back. Looks like we're gonna get a lot of King Kong in it.
Kong.
Super excited for that.
Yeah, you know. Go, Andrew.
No, go ahead, Aaron.
You go.
I was just gonna say, you know, one episode, the show from this season, from this year that I haven't seen is the new season of The Diplomat. The first two seasons, amazing. Third season is coming out or is out.
Third season coming out is over. Third season is better than the first and second.
Stop it.
I shit you not. It is so good. In fact, at the end of the first episode, my wife and I mean, we both, like, you know, jaws just hanging open and, you know, looking at each other going, did not see that coming. I mean, it is so good. It is so good.
That's one I watch with my wife, so we need to get our schedule together and start watching season 3 of Diplomat, because the first two seasons are amazing.
Yeah, and we just started this week, and I think we're 3-4 episodes in, and it is so stinking good. It is so stinking good. Yeah.
Well, should we now pivot? Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, TV shows I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, Stranger Things coming back later this month. Very much excited for the final season of Stranger Things. I'm ready for it to be over, but I'm excited to see how. Well, like, you know, it's one of those shows that it's like it's been 10 damn years. The, you know, that, like, these for 5 seasons, and I understand
these kids have TV kids of their own now.
They do.
The pandemic did them no favors.
Yeah, exactly. The pandemic, the writer strike, but, you know, hopefully the final season. You know, I say hopefully because nothing ever does sticks the landing. But I'm very much looking forward to that. I think it's released in 3 parts, I think, around Thanksgiving, Christmas, and then the final episode, I believe, comes out New Year's Eve. And we'll be playing in certain theaters, hopefully a theater near me, because I'll go watch it.
Yeah, I'm eager for season 5 of Stranger Things. I am cautiously optimistic, and I say this as someone who desperately wants to love again, about Star Trek Starfleet Academy.
I am cautious,
but it sure does look good, and it's well cast, and so I hope to God it's worth a damn. And then also, I cannot wait for Vision Quest on Disney Plus. I love everything about what that show's got going on there. You know, Terry Metalis was the showrunner for season 3 of Picard and is just fantastic. And, you know, Disney went and hired him away when Paramount Plus was not smart enough to give him an ongoing Star Trek show.
I just rewatched Age of Ultron last night as part of my MCU rewatch, and I gotta say I'm very excited for Vision Quest.
Yeah, and I'm speaking of rewatch and transitioning into movies, you know, we took a little bit of a break in October, and so I spent I spent some of the time that I normally committed to comic books to watching movies, and I rewatched all the Snyderverse films. I watched the, you know, what, 6 hour Justice League film.
Good Lord.
The Snyder cut of Man of Steel and the Snyder cut of Dawn of Justice, and then watched both Suicide Squad movies.
Good.
And then also The Flash. And God dang it, if I don't like all of those even more, I still, you know, hold that, you know, the Superman in the Snyderverse films is not nearly as hopeful and optimistic as I would like, but I like that he is organic to the universe that Zack Snyder made. I think those movies are really great. I think they are very rewatchable. They're not necessarily iconic, but I think they're really good for what they are. And I enjoyed all of them. And every time I watch The Flash, I think I've watched The Flash maybe 4 times now. Every time I watch it, I'm like, you know, this is a really damn good movie that that the actor ruined.
Correct.
You know, because of his off-screen antics, you know, not because of his performance, because his performance on screen is outstanding.
100% agree.
Yeah, just outstanding. And I'm like, wow. And it just makes me wonder what the history of the DC franchise would have had the off-screen shenanigans. Because I just think it's a really good movie.
You know what's crazy to me is, I'm not going to turn this into a Snyder podcast.
Well, you can, because Wayne's not here.
True. So. But had they just let it continue, had they not just, you know, hesitated, the shit would have been done long before this James Gunn reboot anyway, right? Like the whole plan, I believe, was intended to be done by like 28. It was intended to be done way before now anyway. Yeah. And so we would have had the whole saga and been done with it. And now, you know, it's just kind of a bummer that we never got to see it fully come to fruition. But I will say, you know, I'm not like a Snyder brony that thinks that they're the greatest movies ever. But I do say that, like, that trilogy of Man of Steel, Dawn of Justice, and Justice League, the Snyder cut specific version. Yeah. But you also throw in Wonder Woman in there, which was, you know, heavily influenced by Zack Snyder.
The first Wonder Woman.
There is no second Wonder Woman.
Thank you.
It is just a shame that what they did to that universe and how they treated it. And, you know, you had Black Adam that was setting stuff up. Like, there was a lot of excitement in that. And I feel like they, with some minor tweaks, they could have really turned it into something, but they just kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater.
Agreed.
On that one. But, you know, in this world of movies, you know, I'm actually just going to kind of hit all my movies at the same time.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've been talking about streaming TV shows and how there's so much stuff on streaming. Two of my favorite movies of this year were born out of streaming services. Frankenstein, which was produced for Netflix and then, you know, made a deal with Guillermo del Toro to release the film in cinemas, and it did so well, they continued to expand its release. Now it's available in both. You can probably watch it in certain movie theaters, limited release, and it's available on Netflix right now. Probably my favorite movie of the year. Additionally, F1 with Brad Pitt and directed by the same guy who did Top Gun. I don't recall his name. The new Top Gun, not the original Top Gun. Even though it is produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, I will say that. The F1 movie, even if you are not an F1 fan, released in theaters, but it was produced by Apple TV. It's available now on Apple TV that you can watch, readily available, is really, for me, a throwback to the Jerry Bruckheimer type movies of the 80s, things like Days of Thunder, Top Gun, those types of things. And yes, some people really despise those movies, but it's just a reminder of like, hey, this movie's really not going to challenge me in a way that, it's just going to entertain me. And that's how F1 felt to me. Like, it's, the good guys are, the good guys are manly, the women are beautiful. There's a lot of great excitement. Joseph Kosinski is the director. And it's just a throwback to like that great 80s Bruckheimer type content that I grew up on. And I really love that about it. And those are both tied to obviously streaming services. And then, when I think about two other movies that I had the best time in movie theaters watching this year, I think about Sinners with Michael B. Jordan. I
haven't watched it yet. Yeah.
Which is just, something truly... despite the fact that, it's very similar to From Dusk Till Dawn, right? It's basically an African-American version of From Dusk Till Dawn, but still brings something wholly unique to it, through great acting and writing and music. I mean, everything in that movie sings perfectly together, and I really enjoyed that about it. And the sleeper for me this year, crazy enough, was Ballerina, from the John Wick spinoff movie.
Mm-hmm.
It bombed. It truly bombed, and I don't know why, because Ana de Armas, maybe she's not a box office draw, but she's perfectly fine. But the movie, frankly, I enjoyed it more than the last few John Wick movies. It is just nonstop fun action, much like F1 and stuff like that. It's not going to challenge you. You're not going to leave it like feeling, how do I feel about that ending? There's nothing ambiguous about the ending. It is just like, it's a fun action movie. And I think that's one of the things that I really appreciated about it is, in this time where there is so much down and dour entertainment and movies find a way to either be huge blockbusters or so challenging that they're hard to crack emotionally. I appreciate when I can just go to the movies, turn off my brain and have fun. And that's what Ballerina does. And so those are my kind of like four call outs for 2026 as far as movies.
So for some reference, Ballerina is currently the 29th highest grossing film of 2025 with a little over $58 million.
I guess that's not horrible.
What did it cost to make?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't have their budget, production budget on here. And I'm pretty sure that's international, not domestic too. Yeah. So
it's pretty rough. It's in the grand scheme of things. But if it was a true low budget film, it probably did financially fine, but certainly not as well as a John Wick film.
Yeah, true. So they don't have that Keanu star power to bring people in the doors, I guess. So for me, I was looking over this list. I just pulled up Box Office Mojo, sorted everything by year, and was looking over the movies this year. And I have not seen a lot of movies in theaters this year, to be honest.
Same.
So for me, like, there's movies I've wanted to go see and just have not found the time, like Tron Ares. I don't think that would be on the list of great movies, but Predator Badlands.
I enjoyed Tron Ares, and I will say it suffers from the same issues as what we were just talking about with Flash. It's an actual pretty solid movie that its box office is informed by the antics of its lead actor.
Yeah.
I have not seen Predator Badlands, but I really want to. Same. I really, really want to.
The Naked Gun, I kind of want to go see. I was a huge fan of those original movies, Leslie Nielsen and the Day, but I haven't got there yet. It seems like I'm just waiting for more things to come to streaming than going to theaters. But out of the things I saw in theaters, I'm going to be very on brand here. Love Superman, new Superman, same. Amazing. I just saw it again a second time last night in a pseudo theater. Just to have kind of that experience again. Thunderbolts. I know some people weren't wild about it, but I really like kind of the underlying message. I love seeing, the Red Guardian and Yelena and everyone back together, with Bucky. And then, Fantastic Four. I was a little worried about how with Pedro Pascal being Mr. Fantastic, he still is not really what I'd say the greatest. I think there are better choices to play Mr. Fantastic, but mm-hmm. You know what? It was a good enough movie that the movie as a whole kind of overcame it, and I enjoyed it. So, I mean, I'm just going to pick those three comic book movies out of my limited selection this year.
Everything that Andrew just said. and largely because I haven't seen a whole lot in theater this year. I've watched a lot of movies that were new to me, but came out prior to 2025. I want to watch Sinners, haven't had a chance to. I want to watch Frankenstein, and that is the correct way to pronounce it, Paul. I want to watch it, I just haven't gotten. I've got a huge queue in my watch lists, my various mini watch lists, because of all the various streaming services. But there's a lot of terrific content out there, just haven't had a chance to get to. And largely because I'm watching a lot of older stuff.
Yeah. So. Well, that's why they keep remaking that older stuff to try to draw you back to the movie theater. But, I'm looking at some of the releases of 2026, right? And there's actually quite a great deal of movies that I have an interest in 2026. And I'm thinking like, what's the movie that most excites me? Like, I will tell you coming into this year, like some of the movies I've just talked about, F1, Frankenstein, and Sinners were some of the most anticipated movies of the year. And they did not disappoint. As I think about 2026, I mean, there's so much. We're going to get Avengers Doomsday. We're going to get the new Spider-Man, Brand New Day. We're going to get the Odyssey from Christopher Nolan. I mean, there's quite a
Mando and Grogu
of content. And that's the one that I was going to say, the one I'm most looking forward to is Mandalorian and Grogu. I really am so excited to see that on the big screen, directed by Jon Favreau, revisiting those characters in a much more condensed format, like not a TV show, but like a movie. I think I have a lot of faith in it.
Does the Starfighter Star Wars film, what is that called?
I think it is called Starfighter. It's the one with Ryan Gosling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's Star Wars. No, 2027.
Okay.
But we're gonna get a lot of stuff next year.
Yeah.
We really are.
Well, and I mean, quote, this year was pretty light, even though, we had Fantastic Four, we had Thunderbolts, we had Superman. It was a scaled back year because Marvel didn't fill up all four quadrants, in the year. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we got quality films this year. Say that in 2020. But I got to tell you, I'm super excited about the new Avengers film. I'm super excited about the new Spider-Man film. I'm super excited about the new Star Wars. I am excited about all of that. And then in terms of TV, cannot wait for more Monarch Legacy of Monsters.
Thanks.
So,
yeah,
all kinds of good stuff coming. So too you much, know, perhaps. you got to stay on your treadmill, Paul. Stay healthy and be around.
So thin, watching all these shows, just nonstop treadmill shows.
Now, well, would it be ideal for you to go to a movie with treadmill?
No.
Okay, just checking. I didn't know, but maybe that was something you wanted to get into.
No, that's okay. Treadmills for TV shows, not movies.
I tell you what, I have mentioned before about the TV on the patio, and I just got to tell you, I love watching old movies because I've watched a lot of '80s stuff, and it's great. It's great.
I'm impressed Paul can watch a show while on the treadmill, because when I'm at the gym, like, I will glance at the screens, but I don't have the attention to pay it to really get involved in whatever's on the screen.
I may listen
to something. I find it's the only thing I can. Mm. Sorry, Aaron, I didn't mean to talk over you, but like, to your point, like listening, I cannot listen to an audiobook or something like that because my mind wanders too much. But if I'm watching something, it takes two of my senses, my sight and my sound. So I can, I find that I tend to focus on it a little bit more, and it takes my attention away from the pain of working out.
Well, and that's my thing, is that I'm generally listening to music when I'm working out.
Same.
Just because I really hate working out, and it helps transport to somewhere else, and
helps distract you.
Yeah. I have never been one of those people who has experienced a runner's high. I have never been someone who's like, "Oh, that was a good workout." Oh my god. You know, that's
usually. I used to swim when I was much, much younger. When I was a swimmer, I would get that high, but I've never gotten it while I've been running.
Yeah.
The pain in my knees somehow seemed to overwhelm the endorphins.
Exactly. Yeah. And now hip, knee and hip now. So,
One of my colleagues who's I think maybe a year or two younger than me, they're doing the Arizona Ironman tomorrow.
Does that come with a reactor?
No, that's where you swim, like, and I'm gonna get these distances wrong, so don't hate me. But the Ironman's like 4 mile swim, and then it's a ridiculously long amount of time on a bike, and then you run a marathon.
Yeah, they're brutal.
That sounds awful.
Yeah. I've done triathlons when I was younger, but they were much the run was like a 5K, not like a marathon. So I'd have done like scaled down triathlons 20 years ago. But this whole Ironman thing is just crazy.
Yeah.
So she makes me feel like I'm she very much makes me feel out of shape when I sit next to her.
Don't worry. We won't be talking about us doing that on the future episode of the podcast.
That's right.
All right, y'all.
Well, all right. Paul, I feel like we have successfully talked about movies, television, comic books, and a few podcasts. So
I feel like Dr. Demento, we fit in your Dr. Demento conversation.
That's right. But finally,
dear listener, we want your feedback. Aaron, how can they get in touch with us?
Yeah, shoot us a note at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com.
Also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or X.
What a deal. Well, hey, guys, next time we'll get together and talk about just the comics. Just the comics.
Probably not.
Yeah.
We'll talk about other things.
We'll wander.
Yeah. We will catch you then.
Bye, guys.
All right. See ya.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.